Okay, I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee. We have the minutes from April 11th in our packets. Anybody care to make a motion? Mr. Atkins, you look like you've probably been studying.
I've studied thoroughly, Mr. Chair, and I'll move the minutes.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The first item on the agenda this morning is to modify the budget resolution. And the chair will make the motion, but just before I make the motion, when we set the budget resolution, there was some anticipation that there might be some increases in revenue in the transportation sector, and so we had built in a reduction in transportation of $20 million. I'm sure all of you have been reading what's been taking place in the media, but the references to revenue appear to not be happening, or at least there's some uncertainty there. So we're going to amend the budget resolution to reestablish that $20 million, and then as we did with several of the other, or most of the other committees, there will be some new revenue provided for the transportation committee as well, to the tune of $26.8 million. So the chair moves that page 2, line 6, we delete $1,187,042,000 and insert $1,140,242,000. And that will also mean that on page 2, line 7, we delete $160,050,000 and insert $206,850,000. So that will accomplish what I was indicating, what our goal here is this morning. So the chair makes that motion. Any discussion? Okay, seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. And we have then our first bill up this morning. House File 1160, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would move that House File 1160 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us. And Representative Hillstrom, you have a couple of amendments that are technical. Do you want to take those up now?
I would, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'd like to start with the A6 amendment. Members, in the bill, we have a section where public defenders are supposed to pay the transcripts that they owe, and there's actually a statutory reference there. But transcripts actually are covered under many different sections in the statute, and so we're just going to eliminate the statutory reference and just say that they must pay for the transcripts. So I would ask for your support, Mr. Chair.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The second amendment is the A7 amendment. Members, this is part of the policy bill on the provision that requires more frequent background checks for guardians. Members, there ended up being a fiscal note from Commerce, and that was not the intention. And so this language is what Commerce needs in order to get rid of their fiscal note. Mr. Chair.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hillstrom on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Members, this bill is the Judiciary Finance Bill. Members, the request that was made by the Supreme Court was $34 million over the base. The number, if you add in all of the other areas, including the public defenders and the tax court, was $44 million over the base, and we were granted a general fund target of $30 million with the ability to raise additional money if we needed to actually fund this area. So this proposal is much like the governor's proposal. However, in the proposal that was sent to the legislature, it had raises for judges at 4% in the first year and 4% in the second year. And that would have also taken care of their pension issues. The pension piece is now being carried in the pension bill, so that is not part of our budget target. So we have a 3% raise for judges and 3% in the first and second years to match the raise that the Supreme Court asked for their staff. There is a $75 fee that currently is on the attorney registration fee that's levied by the Supreme Court, and that is expiring. And that has gone to pay for about 25 public defenders. And so this bill actually replaces that money that will be lost, so there will not be the cut of 25 public defenders. We replace that money in this bill. In addition to the governor's recommendations, we have added additional money for specialty courts. That has been a large, popular thing across the state, and we have seen that there has been great success when you fund specialty courts in keeping people out of prison. There are additional funding for the tax court. That would create two new FTEs that was in the governor's budget. We also have Representative Moline's bill that was not in the governor's proposal, which for the Court of Appeals allows for judges on the Court of Appeals who live outside of 50 miles from where they are chambered here in St. Paul to have housing reimbursement and mileage starting in 2015. That's $46,000 in 2015 and $115,000 in 2016. The way that we pay for the additional resources to the public defenders, specialty courts, and then Representative Moline's bill, in addition to the gap that we had in the public defenders budget, is that we have created a graduated fee for conciliation court filings. Right now, it costs $65 no matter how much money you're fighting over in conciliation court. And the state is graduating how much money you can file in conciliation court to $15,000 in statute. That's due to take effect this year. So what we believed is that it would be appropriate to graduate the fees that you pay based on how much money you're fighting over in conciliation court. So if you're fighting over $1,000 to $4,999, you would pay $110 to file a case in conciliation court. If your amount in controversy is between $5,000 and $10,000, you'd pay $125. And if the amount you were fighting over was the new amount between $10,000 and $15,000, you would pay $150 filing fee. This increase generates $1.673 million in 2014 and $2.31 million in 2015. We've also increased the criminal traffic surcharge. So if you get a speeding ticket or you commit a crime, the state's portion will go up by $15. This generates $5.557 million in 2014 and $7.436 million in 2015. And then there is a new fee that we have added. Currently, if you are arrested and you want to post a bond, you go to a bond company, you pay a portion of that bond fee, and the bond company posts the bond on your behalf. If you fail to appear, that bond is forfeited. And then you get arrested, and the bond company then comes in and asks for their money back. And currently, they don't pay a fee to file to ask for their money back. And in fact, they do get their money back. And so we are saying that if the bond company is going to make a motion to get that money back, they should pay a portion to the state, and it should be 10% or no less than $100 if they're going to get that money back. So that is a new bond reinstatement fee. And then the last fee is a special revenue fund. And one of the things that's happening in the court system is that the court is moving to electronic filing, e-filing, and e-discovery. And there are many users of the court that don't have access to that technology. We have many pro se defendants who appear in family court. We have many pro se defendants who appear in custody. They may be in jail. And then we have the public defenders, corrections, many, many users of the court system that don't have the technology capabilities to utilize what's going to be required by the court. They've currently implemented e-filing and e-discovery in 7 counties, and they will be implementing it in 87 counties statewide. So we are putting a $2 filing fee on all the filing fees. It will be a technology fee. For $2, this will generate $2.538 million in 2014 and $3.046 million in 2015. And this would be for the court to determine with the partners how the people on the opposite side of the bench can actually access justice with the needs for technology. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll just simply say the only policy provision that is in this bill is the guardian conservator bill, and the reason that's in here is because the court put a fiscal note on it, which created a need to pay for it, Mr. Chair.
Okay. The motion is before us, so any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to say thanks to the fiscal staff for putting in the fees in here so we get to see them, although it didn't have the fifth one, which was the reinstatement of the one fee for the public defender. But I am curious, can you tell me, I know you mentioned some of the FTEs, but can you give me the total FTEs that will be added?
Sure. So, Representative Erickson, one of the challenges with this area is because we are replacing the fee that is expiring, that pays for 25 lawyers, and so that isn't really new lawyers, so there are no new positions there. The specialty court has 2 FTEs that could potentially be hired. The guardian and conservators would be 0.75 FTEs. In the governor's recommendation, there were 2 tax court FTEs, and the funding for the public defense board then is 30 FTEs for a total in the bill of 34.75.
But that, Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, that doesn't include the 25 because you felt that that was a reinstatement. Can you tell me why were they set to expire? Was that just?
Sure. So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, back in 2000s ago, we had a budget cut that happened in the public safety area, and one of the things that we did was I introduced a bill to pay for public defenders with an attorney registration fee. The Supreme Court informed me back then that the Supreme Court has sole jurisdiction over attorney licenses and that I should not put that in the statute. So I did not, but the Supreme Court did in fact add a temporary surcharge on attorney registrations in order to fund public defenders because public defenders really needed the resources. And so that was put on for 2 years by the court, then it expired, and then they extended it for 2 more years. It is due to expire again, and the court, in the opinions of the previous 2 opinions, really made it very clear that it is the legislature's job to fund the public defenders as this is a constitutionally protected right. And so we're putting this in to make sure that the legislature is doing their job.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, so now they've reversed their decision on whose role it is to charge the fee, whether it's the state versus the courts doing it? Because it seems like it's a little reversal. If you can help me walk through that a little bit.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The court's opinion always was that it was the legislature's job. But because the legislature was not doing it, the court said in their opinion that they would do it temporarily. They did it for 2 years. They extended it for 2 years, and that's due to expire.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, so we're just taking on this as part of the budget versus them having it as part of theirs, though.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was always the obligation of the legislature to do this, and they, when we failed to do so, they did agree that they would do it temporarily. So I believe that it really was our responsibility, and it was just a creative, temporary solution when we proposed it back then.
All right, thank you.
Representative Holbert. Oh, that was Anderson, D.C. Any further discussion? Okay, if not, then Representative Hillstrom renews her motion that House File 1160, first engrossment be recommended to pass as amended and be placed on the general register. Any further discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion carried.
Thank you, members.
Okay, now we go to Representative Wagenius' bill, House File 976. Representative Wagenius, do you want to make a motion to put the bill before us?
Yes, I would like to move House File number 976 be recommended to pass and move to general register.
Okay, the motion is before us, and you have an amendment. You want to take that up now and then present the bill after?
Yes.
Okay. You want to move the amendment, Representative?
Yes, I would like to move the amendment A21. It deletes a section that I got some information from the Department of Agriculture that if this section was in, my bill was not balanced, and so I am taking it out.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Wagenius on the bill.
I will, and with me is Mr. Hagemeyer from who is our fiscal analyst, and I appreciate his being up here with me. What I would like to do, members, is very, very quickly go over just some differences between the governor's bill and the bill we're bringing to you. There are not a lot of differences. It, as I go through it on the spreadsheet, I will highlight where there are fees and then come back and talk to you about fees and employees. So if that is the will of the committee, I will go ahead.
That sounds fine to me. Representative Guineas.
Okay. Thank you. On the spreadsheet, and that's what I'm working off of, we're starting with the Department of Agriculture, and you can see that we added $500,000 to the Department of Agriculture, and we the expenditure for that $500,000 will be seen in its general fund money. It is for increased food handler inspections, and that is for $225,000 each year, and training manuals for manure application at $25,000 each year, and that is where that $500,000 was spent. You will see some other changes where in this department we the governor requested $670,000 for lab operations, and instead of taking it all from the general fund, we took $245,000 general fund and then took from the agriculture account, the pesticide part, took $90,000 each year in order for the pesticide folks to pay their fair share of this lab operations. Similarly, there is money from that account for monitoring pesticides and pesticide degradants and for pollinator habitat restoration. We took these $90,000 that we had then from the general fund and put it into sustainable agriculture demonstration grants, and that's at the bottom. So with that, that is the difference that I see in the Department of Agriculture. We do have the base adjustment that you will see then on when you get to the admin and financial assistance portion. Board of Animal Health is on the bottom of that page 2. It has a base adjustment, and other than that, we gave the same. Similarly with Agri. All right. Now we're at the Pollution Control Agency, and I will point out to you that SR, and I'm looking at the totals and just highlighting it for you, that SR is for the silica sand, which we can talk about later, but that's what that is for. You will see now, when I'm looking for, there is an air fee increase that is on under, these are big pages. That is statutory. And we're now at the top of page 4. That's a statutory fee. It's just raised to cover the cost of that program. We'll come down, that I will highlight for you now in environmental assistance and cross-media program. This is where you find Environmental Quality Board. And so the expenditure for that is, because people have brought up this issue, I'm highlighting it for you. The expenditure for that from the general fund is $312,000 each year, and for the environmental fund, it's $188,000 each year. If I could go on now, we're on a natural, of course, there is a base adjustment, and you will find that at the top of page 5. Now we're in the Department of Natural Resources, and you will see in the lands and minerals, and that's where there is a reduction in the general fund, and you'll see that reduction in the general fund, and that we're going to have fees to fill the general fund here. Similarly with the Drill Corps Library, and I will go over there. The one other difference I will note for you that we took money from the minerals management account and are funding the school trust lands director, and that is near the bottom of page 5. Okay. Now, the water management fees, now you will see that that's a difference that I know folks are going to want to discuss. That is in page 110 in your bill, and we will discuss that in more in depth. I'm just highlighting it for you in the spreadsheet. You will note in forest management, there's a reduction. Well, there are a couple of changes here. One of them is a reduction in the FMIA, and that is mainly reflect reality, honest budgeting. More was allocated, but the dollars were not there, so we have just brought that down to what the reality is. There is a difference of a grant to the forest state nurseries for determining how we are going to manage the nurseries in the future to make sure that we have those trees that are appropriate as we move into an era of climate change. I am now on the next page in Parks and Trails Management, where we added some general fund dollars for restorations for pollinator habitat. I believe this was Representative, it's either Torkelson or Poppy's bill. Torkelson's bill. And that's what we were working on, pollinator habitat there. And then you will see construction of restroom facilities at Crane Lake. And that's in the middle of the page, and that's from That's from the water rec account in the natural resources account. Okay, and game and fish, I think there are no changes. In enforcement, there are going to be some significant changes, and let me tell you about those. For one, you're looking in the middle of the page. We put an additional $1 million each year into grants for local units of government for preventing aquatic invasive species, and that would include things like decontamination. Now, that's an allowable expense. Then the next thing you will see is that we're doing a records management system. And what that really means is that right now a conservation officer who gives somebody a ticket or a warning does not know whether another conservation officer just 10 miles down the road gave that same person a ticket or a warning just hours before. So what we are planning here is a real-time management system, so conservation officers will know what's going on. And this is an enforcement provision that has been asked for again and again, and we are funding it. It is $719,000 each year. Half of that money is new money from the general fund, which will be in the base, and half of $120,000 is from the money that we were giving to the conservation officers for already for managing aquatic invasives, and then we take other money from the Heritage Fund, $120,000, and another from Game and Fish, $120,000. And that's what funds this on an ongoing basis. So that those are highlights I wanted to make for you. In Bowser, you will see we're on now on page 9. Not much change here, but we did put in some general fund money in addition for performance review for an ongoing for performance review as we are going out and spending money. There is some substantial lack of accountability here that we need to work on. Metropolitan Parks and Trails is $350,000. That's to match the $350,000 that went to state parks, and so the state parks and trails got $350,000. Metro got $350,000, and this was particularly for grants for solar energy. We're carrying money in from the natural resources, but it's the same as the governor for the Conservation Corps. And with that, I will now talk to you. The zoo is the same with base adjustments, zoo is in here, base adjustments, just as the governor asked. So now I will get to the fees and spend a little bit of time with you about fees. And I believe you have a sheet that our fiscal analyst prepared for you. Since I expect there will be questions here, let me talk to you about some of these fees more in depth. The permit to mine fee, and now you're going to see this more toward the bottom of the page that the fiscal analyst prepared for you. But the revenue here is, and it will be on page 106 in your bill, if you're looking for it in your bill, is $310,000 in 2014 and $356,000 revenue in 2015. And where this will come from is there are nine taconite permits, and they go from 60 to 84,000. And there are 7 scram permits from 5,000 to 10,000. 250 and 10 peat that will go from 1,000. This is what will, this is the outcome. This is where the money will come from, 1,000 to 1,350. With this money, we will fully recover the cost of the mineral reclamation program. This permit to mine program used to be funded entirely by the general fund. And now, currently, with 2010, there was this permit to mine fee, and that funded half of the mineland reclamation program. With this fee, the rest of it is funded, so there won't be general fund money. Okay. Let me then go for some of the other fees here. So one of the next things you're going to see are real estate leases on state forested land, and basically lease fees. And right now, I can currently a real estate lease on state forest land does not have a fee, and the expectation is that it will go up. It's paid for by the general fund. I mean, the work done right now is paid for by the general fund, and so there will be an application fee of $500 for aggregate leases and $100 for miscellaneous leases. For real estate leases on lands other than forested land, there's currently no fee. The costs are currently paid by the general fund, and it's the same price that we will go out. There are leases for iron ore mine and stockpile leases, drill core fee leases. The real estate application fee, but let's go back to that, is currently projected to bring in $21,000 a year. These fees, that will not nearly cover the cost of the entire real estate leasing program. The projected cost for the entire real estate lease and administration program, about $400,000 a year. The Drill Corps library, where there is a fee, will bring in about $105,000 a year. They are going to then reduce the hours of operation, but then these costs will be fully covered by the fees. I told you there was an aggregate fee, reclamation fee. It's expected to bring in $18,000 a year, and will result in 2 sites being reclaimed starting in 2016. There is an exploratory boring inspection fee, and it would bring in a projected $104,000 per year. Again, this is to recover costs, and in this case, it would fully recover costs. So if there are more questions about this, we can go into that more in depth if you would like. Let's go to,
do you want to wait till they end?
I think they're on, let's look at
Representative McNamara has indicated he has a question. Would you prefer to get through the bill and then take questions, or is it all right to do them as we go?
It's up to him.
The chair is open to whatever the author would like.
If he'd like a question.
Okay, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Wagenius, you specifically talked about
these mining fees are being increased to cover the cost. And I guess first, if I could just start, rather than dive into all of them literally, I'm looking at one of them as an example, exploratory boring hole inspection fee. I remember when we toured last winter, we went up, many of us legislators went on a tour to the McGregor, Minnesota area and looked at some exploratory mining going on. And if I remember right, when they get done mining, this is a hole in the ground, literally, that is just a hole in the dirt. I'm trying to understand the $2,000 per hole. What kind of work is DNR doing in regards to this? Because when we've talked with DNR and industry, I don't think you could ever, ever get to $2,000 per hole for these exploratory boring hole fee increase costs of DNR.
It is my understanding that the DNR inspects these holes and that the money that is going to be brought in, $104,000 per year, covers the cost of those inspections.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wagenius, if I remember the testimony correctly, DNR visits these sites once or twice to look at the exploratory hole and say, yes, there is a hole, it's properly covered. How are you getting to $2,500? And again, Mr. Chair, I don't want to go through the whole bill here, but I'm trying to just accentuate there's all kinds of fee increases for throughout here, and Representative Wagenius has repeated that they are just to recover the costs. I think we have to look at some of these and say, what are the costs? How can you possibly get to $2,000 a hole? It's not substantiable. That's probably not a right word. You can't substantiate that. Thank you.
I think if you, for that, DNR is telling me and telling the committee that this is money to recover their costs. If you are suggesting that we get into an audit function, I am not the auditor here, and if you would like to talk to DNR about that, I think that would be appropriate.
Well, Mr. Chair, again, I just think Representative Wagenius, your fee increases are so, and we worked hard over the last 6-8 years to make sure that fees were in line with what the actual costs were. And I find it pretty amazing that this one, if I'm not mistaken, is, I don't know how many hundreds of percent increase, but it just serves as an example. Representative Wagenius, the other one question, thank you, Mr. Chair, the other question I had, I didn't see where you mentioned where are all the non-ferrous fee increases in here. I see on the spreadsheet that Mr. Hagemeyer has given us, he mentions taconite and scram and peat, but I don't know if these do include, and are they lumped in, which category are they in?
I believe that I mentioned that in 2013 there were 9 taconite. I mean, to get down to how many there are currently, there are 9 taconites, 7 scrams, and 10 peats.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, I'm curious of the non-ferrous fee increases. I got those 3, but I'm wondering where are they in this bill? Because you have numerous non-ferrous fee increases in your bill, but I don't see them on this fee changes. They may be in one of the things I just can't see, because the detail's not here.
There are fee increases for non-ferrous, and I would have to ask DNR specifically on that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe it is a DNR question. If I'm not mistaken, there's a $75,000 flat fee, and then and I believe that's a doubling of the current, and I'm wondering, are they in that top fee of $306,000 a year, or where are they?
They are.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Representative Wagenius, my other question is, as you know, I was totally amazed to get a spreadsheet, if I'm not mistaken, on the last day before this bill was voted out. We had no spreadsheet at all. Currently, we have a spreadsheet that it's never been in my 11 years, one that lacks the current biennium. We have no way of knowing the current biennium. We did receive this morning, for the first time, a column on the left of our spreadsheet that's called February Forecast Actual FY12-13. Unfortunately, I don't think that's the current biennium. If you were to look at Representative Kahn's bill, we haven't seen that yet. But if you go into that folder and you'll look, there's a column there that is the current biennium. It notes it in the law that was passed that is that. As you notice, we talk all over and over about the fee increases and how we're trying to recover all the costs. But nowhere do we actually talk about what are the current fees and what is the increase. And as if we just pick the simple one that I talked about, the exploratory boring fee, because we're only in the mining ones now. If you go to aquatic plant management, it's even probably a better example when we get to that. We can't substantiate that these really are what the costs are. We are increasing fees unbelievably in this bill. And if you look at the spreadsheet that we have, Representative Wagenius, the finance spreadsheet, even though it does, we don't know what the current biennium is, so we voted it out of committee without a clue. And then if you look at the language you're using on the spreadsheet, data analytics, investment in game and fish fee management, habitat conservation, investment in forest management. Why are we not using the correct language for what the fees really are or what we're doing? This spreadsheet, it's impossible to follow and understand what's really in it. And I wouldn't blame you. You know, I probably would want to use language that's different to not really somebody be able to follow. But Representative Wagenius, I actually am really trying hard to know what's all in your bill, and I'm befuddled. Sorry.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think historically members should know that it was the general fund that paid for a lot of the services in DNR lands and minerals. And that's when we had lots of money. And then going back and asking the people to who benefited from the services from DNR to pay has been a struggle. And it's been a struggle for years now. But hopefully, with this bill, we are at the end of that struggle. And the folks who are benefiting are the ones that are paying rather than the general fund. I find it more appropriate for the general fund to be doing things like education. But there has been a huge resistance, and I will admit that there has been a huge resistance to asking the mining companies to pay for the benefits that they receive from the state. And I just, this is going to be an ongoing conversation. With the note, Representative McNamara, I'm kind of surprised you're asking to go back for 2 years and look at some of the differences in 2 years ago, because one of the things that we have struggled with in this bill, and I know you know we've struggled with in this bill, is that parts of DNR were paid for by the lottery dollars. And so in the last biennium, many of the programs that the LCCMR had recommended were cut because we needed to, or you needed to fill in or use that money for filling in parts of DNR. So what has happened with this budget is it is a straightforward budget where we are using no money from the lottery. I can tell you that. This is not using other monies It is a straightforward budget. So I can just assure members of that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I can answer a couple of the questions a little more specifically for you. The data analytics that shows up in each division, if you look on the bill on page 68, line 17, you'll see a $300,000 appropriation from the Special Revenue Fund. This was in the governor's budget, and within that appropriation, they're allowed to, the agency bills the divisions and the two funds, the Natural Resource and Game and Fish Fund, for that project. So that's why you see minor portions of that $300,000 in each of the divisions in the different funds. And that was necessary to get to the base numbers that the governor had in his budget. As far as some of the names of the change items, many of those came from the change item reports, detailed change items that we got from the agencies after the governor's budget was created, such as investments in forest management. I'm sure there's some where I might have had to adjust it to fit onto the spreadsheet, or if we had new ones, I created a name that seemed to fit. If there's individual ones that you have a concern with, I can certainly work on those with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Hagemeyer. Thank you.
Okay.
Can I finish?
Yes.
Let me just go on to the next fee increase here, and that's, you're going to find that on page 114. And that is a fee increase for those folks who want to take out aquatic plants, probably in front of their cabin on a lake. I mean, generally, that's what it is. And these would be native plants, because if they're invasives, you can just take them out. You do not have to get a permit from DNR. But if there are native plants that you want to take out in front of your cabin, there is a fee. Now, this is voluntary. Nobody has to do this, by the way. You get a permit to do it. The program now costs $1 million. And of that $1 million, $200,000 is paid for by those who benefit, who get a permit to take out native plants. $400,000 of that is paid for by boat owners. So that is in the so people who pay a boat fee, and it goes into the water. I think it's the water rec account would. Be paying for that to make up the difference, and the other $400,000 comes from the game and fish fee. So it's a program that costs $1 million. The people who are benefiting right now pay $200,000, and $400,000 each comes from the water rec and game and fish. And so, to be fair to the water rec and the game and fish, we are raising a fee. That's what's going on here. And the next thing I will call your attention to is probably the one that we've had more discussion about is the water fees, and that's on page 110 of your bill. And what's going on here, members, and I we have had lots of testimony in our committee about what's going on in Minnesota with regard to groundwater. And the reason we've had this testimony, I think, is because the drought has revealed that groundwater in this state is not even across the state. Some communities are under great stress. Some communities have plenty of groundwater, and of course you all know, I think you know, that 75% of Minnesotans use groundwater for their drinking water. So we have stresses in our state. I know in Representative Hamilton's district, they're under such stress that they ran out of water, and they're getting 25% of their water from Iowa. In Marshall, Minnesota, they are looking 23 miles away for their water. because they're run out in Marshall. And I bring up these two examples as examples of communities that are big ag processing communities, not growing communities, but processing communities. They take a lot of water, and we want that water to be there for them. So the problem we have run into is our DNR over the years has permitted many wells without knowing if there's water available. We really don't know in much of the state where water is available. So to be fair to the folks who live in these areas, that some folks don't take all the water and leave nothing for the rest, we want to make sure that we know where our water is and that it everybody has their fair shot at it. So DNR has not been able to do the job that they are required to do under statute. So what we are doing is simply raising the fees to make sure that DNR has enough money to do what it's required to do under statute. These fees raise about, when they're fully implemented, and they're not in this bill, you'll see they're stepped in, but when they're fully implemented, they will raise $6.1 million a year. And with that, I think I have, I haven't talked about the number of people in this bill, and let me go over that for you. And then I'd be glad to take additional questions. DNR has will have 19 people paid for by the general fund, 63 more paid by the Game and Fish Fund. I expect that's because we had a Game and Fish Fund increase last year of over $10 million a year, which I just note for you is more than we are asking for in the water increase fee. DNR will get 31 new employees for the natural resources, PCA, 2 from the general fund, 19 from a special revenue fund, Bowser, 3, and the conservation corps, 74. One of the very specifically, the silica sand is going to be 12 people. And so that, and I know that DNR gave me a note this morning that said how many we are getting in for the water, and I don't know what that is right this minute. Let's see if I, oh, wait a sec. 20. And with that, that's my testimony.
Hey, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, just I've got a couple of more kind of procedural questions I'd like to get on the record that we'll have this, because as you know, this bill is very troubling in so many respects, and it would be better if we could understand, because maybe some of it isn't what we think it may be because we don't know. One, I will thank you for the thoroughness in the water appropriation permit fee. You've given us and the department have given us a number of charts that have helped us understand what the fee is. You've been very transparent that currently we collect less than $5 million. The plan is to get it to around $11 million, and you've laid out how you're trying to deal with the serious lack of knowledge today. And I really respect that. I may not agree with how you're doing it and how we're not spending as much on monitoring and USGS atlases that are missing, but at least we know that one and can see the increase. You noted the number of FTEs, and I appreciate that. Unfortunately, there's some other really, especially in the mining area, such significant fee increases, and the aquatic management fee, if I could, well, first, I'm just wondering, maybe will we get the spreadsheet that shows the current, maybe I'll go back to just a couple of procedural questions, that shows the current biennium similar to the way, because the two bills I'm watching today, Representative Kahn's bill has the what was actually enacted into law, so we can see that. I guess that's a question for Mr. Hagemeyer, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, or Why don't we begin with a little history on that with Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, typically the spreadsheets show the revenue change or the fee change categories. They usually don't have the base level on. We will try to get that base level information, but the spreadsheets typically don't have that on because we're measuring the change in the revenue side.
You also asked Mr. Hagemeyer, but I had an earlier conversation with Mr. Marks when you asked the question earlier, so...
I think, Mr. Chair, I'm fine with the answer that Mr. Marks gave, unless you want further clarification.
Okay, very good.
And then, Mr. Chair, do you want me just to continue? I got a couple
that
other...
That is fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, as I said, you've given us the ones on the water fee increases, the FTEs as they are, and what the current fees are. I'm wondering if all the other fee increases, if we could get what the current fees are, how the new fees relate. Some of them, I understand, are new fees, and they're a 100% increase. But could we actually get a chart that shows the current fees, what the new proposed fees are, and then the FTEs associated with those fee increases?
Representative Wagenius.
And I'm not sure I'm understanding which fees you are talking about. The aquatics, I gave you, folks pay $35 right now, and it goes up to $90. I told you where the money comes from for the program. $200,000 is from the fees right now, and then $400,000 is from the Game and Fish Fund, and $400,000 is from the Water Rec account in DNR. And that's how that is paid for. And now what this fee is doing is having those who are benefiting pay rather than the boat owners and the Game and Fish Fund. So I don't know what more I can give you on that. I mean, if there's something specific, I can try to help with it. I can see the need to give you a more just a chart to lay out the mining fees because there is information there that's very specific, and I think maybe a chart would be helpful, and we can do that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, I appreciate you answering my question when I say we don't have a chart that shows the current fee, and you verbalize to me what the current fee is. That's not what I want. I want it in writing so that all the members can see the current aquatic management fee has a cap of $750. I'll use that one. That's a great example. We currently charge $35 per property owner with a cap of $750 in rule. We actually enacted legislation that allowed that to increase to $2,500. I'm not sure why DNR didn't fix the rules so they could charge up to $2,500. I'm not sure, because when we enacted that in law last year, it was my understanding that applied to all. It says in here that it only applies to swimmer itch and algae. I'm not sure what happened that it got enacted that way, but that's the kind of example that I would like to see in writing. Currently, it's capped at $750. We're removing the cap. So there's an example we had in committee of the Lake Owassa, I think was the name of it. The gentleman that testified presented that they had like 200 people or whatever it was on their lake that all go together to treat this area. And so their fee, if it was 200, it would be $18,000. So we're going to have a couple of DNR employees come out in the canoe and paddle around and look and see, yep, it's got, you know, whatever the issue is, the swimmer's itch or Eurasian milfoil or whatever they were treating or the mechanical process. And now we're going to charge $18,000 for that fee. I just want to see the breakdown so we can look and say at $750 today, it's going to $18,000, so that all the members, when we've got these lake associations, are going ballistic. That, are you serious? We're really going to go from $750 to $18,000? And we don't have that anywhere to show us that. We have that the fee goes from $35 to $90. But it doesn't really show what the current situation is. And that's just one example. If you lay out all your fee increases, all the current situation, and if there are some approximate FTEs associated with this, then we can know what we're voting on. I understand Madam Chair, that you know your bill very well and you can verbalize to me my questions. We should be transparent that the public and all the members can see what we're doing.
Can I?
Representative Wagenius.
I think this is all actually laid out in the bill. So I think all your questions are answered on page 114 and 115 because it's all laid out with all the fee increases and exactly what it's going to be. So, I mean, down to the language, there's no permit fee for permits to transplant aquatic plants in public waters. So this is, it's quite well laid out on page 114 and 115.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, I appreciate that your 190-page bill that says where they are. I am frustrated in your lack of willingness to show us the current fees and the proposed fees. We should be transparent in what we're doing so that we can look and say, you have said you DNR tells you they need that. I have a hard time rationalizing they need $18,000 to do an aquatic management fee for a lake association. If we know that and can see that currently it's $750, I mean, if the department's bringing in $200,000 a day in aquatic plant management and now they're going to bring in $700,000, we can make a judgment on that. I understand that I can go through your bill, though I got to be honest, in 46 hours that we had this bill, there's no way I could go through the entire bill, and I actually know some of the bill, so I don't know how somebody else could do it. All I'm asking for you, and if you don't want to give it to it, I get it. You don't want to give us the current fees. You want us to find them buried in the bill. How in the world are we going to get through this bill on the floor with the questions I'm asking now when we have all the other people that are going to ask questions on the floor? You're, again, your water appropriation permit fee increase is substantial, but you've laid out what it is. We can understand it. We see it. I don't have any questions about that because you've done a great job of laying it out. And Mr. Meckel from the DNR, I commend you for doing this and showing us what it is because I get it. We should do the same for the other ones, and it doesn't need to be to this detail, but we should get that. And I've asked for it over and over, and I apologize, Mr. Chair. I get that it's buried in the bill. We should have a spreadsheet that shows it to us.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you. I think it's quite well laid out in the bill, but if it would be helpful to have it in a spreadsheet, I mean, if members want to look, particularly on page 114, the fee for control of a rooted aquatic plant by pesticides or mechanical means will be $90. And then there's, with some language, and then if you go on to page 115 to control, here's the problem. I cannot read the word, what kind of algae, but there is some kind of algae that starts with F, and it is... Can you pronounce that? Okay. These are snails that can that carry swimmer's itch or leeches, singularly in combination. There's a $40 fee for each contiguous parcel or shoreline with a distinctive owner. On line 115.5, for offshore control of submerged aquatic implants by pesticide or to mechanical means, that's $90. And 115.7 to control plankton, algae, or free-floating aquatic plants by lakewide or baywide application of approved pesticides, $90. On 15.9 for commercial mechanical control, for commercial mechanical control permit, $100 annually, and for commercial harvest permit, $100 plus $300 for each public water listed on the application that requires an inspection. And that is, of course, what this bill is paying for, is inspections. An inspection is required for waters with no previous permit history and may be required at other times to monitor the status of the aquatic plant population. Then it goes on to talk about what there's no permit, no fee for. And, of course, one of those things is invasive aquatic plants. And so it's laid out. We can put it in a chart, but those are where the numbers are.
I'm going to take a stab at it. I think it's filamentous.
Thank you. I think you've got it. I couldn't do it. I can't spell either, Mr. Chair. I can add, but I can't spell.
Do you agree that it's filamentous?
I think it's filamentose, but I'm not
filamentose.
Sure.
That would be another alternative. Yeah.
But I actually don't know either. So, Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, just two other things. One, will we be able to get the fund balances of things like Environmental Fund, Natural Resource Fund, Game and Fish Fund, compared to the bills that passed off the floor last year? If we could just know how are the fund balances compared to what they were projected to be at the end of the biennium, and with what you're doing in your bill, what are the net of the changes of those funds? I don't think we've seen that, but if we could have that before the bill's on the floor, what the effect is on all the major funds, Game and Fish specifically, I'm thinking Natural Resource Fund and the Environmental Fund.
Yes, I've seen the Game and Fish. It goes up 100. We're now spending $100 million a year, I think, and the fee was increase that you did was about 10%. So we can certainly get those big numbers for you.
Thank you. And then, Mr. Chair, the only other one that I've got at this point in time is Representative Wagenius. You've got the one that's real troubling in regards to northern Minnesota is the forestry reduction, where you are about $3 million below the governor in the forestry area, and I believe forestry testified in committee that would be about 15 foresters that would not be hired throughout the biennium, or that we would have to let go. I think they would be new hires, not let go, as unfortunately they talked that they don't think they can get the wood out of the woods with your bill. I'm wondering, are you going to work on trying to change that, or what's the plan? And I preface it with, unfortunately, Mr. Chair and members, in the last biennium, we had a couple of natural disasters, one in the area of the Wisconsin-Minnesota border, where we had to sell a lot of wood for cheap prices because of the July 4th storm of 2011. And then, unfortunately, we had another windstorm not much later up in the area of the LaSalle Lake. So a lot of the revenue on forestry is down because we're selling wood for 30 cents on the dollar, which we need to sell it. It's laying down. It's just not as good a wood now. Representative Wagenius, what are you going to do? We need to increase that funding. What are your thoughts, and what are we going to do? We have to have those foresters in the woods.
Representative Wagenius.
The governor put $4 million in his original bill into forestry. We put another $1 million in a supplement. One of the reasons, and I'm going to go back and check this, but if I recall correctly, this is one of the areas in DNR where there were lottery dollars, and that the governor had to fill a hole that had been created by the one-time use of lottery dollars. And that was the problem in DNR. It was a big problem in DNR. And if I remember correctly, forestry was one of those places where lottery dollars, you spent lottery dollars, and they were one-time money. So we will figure out and have exactly for you where lottery dollars were spent in the last budget and where the governor had to backfill or had to fix that problem so there was not a shift from the lottery funds, because there are no lottery dollars in here, folks. This is a straightforward budget.
Okay, we have Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wagenius. I would echo some of the requests that Representative McNamara outlined, and I'm wondering if Mr. Hagemeyer, what I would like to see is more along the lines of what the water fee schedule is. So if you can go back and actually itemize the fees in each of these segments. I like that you have the total fund of the, for the example, the water appropriation fees of the 6.13 and fee increases, but I would actually like to see it all itemized out. It just gives me a better idea. If I have somebody that asks me, well, is my fee on XYZ going to be increased, I can look at the spreadsheet and see what that is. And I would also like to see that this spreadsheet includes all of the fee increases and additions, not just those fees that are being increased, but any new fees that are being added on and so forth, to have it completely comprehensive so we know what we're talking about and looking at. And again, I just echo what Representative McNamara highlighted there. But Representative Wagenius, I have grave concerns about the aquatic management fees. I have was contacted by some of my constituents about this issue last year when the DNR had proposed lifting the cap and increasing the fee. And really, by doing that, lifting that cap and increasing the fees for aquatic management, what you are doing in essence is creating more work for DNR officials, because what you're going to have is lake associations that are going to say, what's the point of me paying into my lake association when I'm going to be paying a higher fee through a lake association doing one group application versus having, now they say, well, forget it, it's going to go up to $10,000, $15,000, $18,000 for some of these lake associations. They're going to see a significant fee increase from $750 to $18,000. There's no incentive for them to belong to the group. And instead of having one entity coming in and controlling the lake, doing the aquatic management, now each of those homeowners are going to go back and say, okay, I'm going to get my own guy in here, and he's going to apply on such and such date. And so you're going to have maybe 10, 20, 30 different people with different applicators coming in to treat the lake, and then that means the DNR has to come out at 20 different times versus one. This is why people get frustrated with government, because this does not make sense. You're increasing a fee and actually increasing the work for the DNR and going from $750 to $18,000. I don't know any lake association that can afford that kind of increase. And we're actually providing a disincentive for people to properly managing our lakes. So I have to say I'm vehemently opposed to that. And I've got some great folks that I have several lakes in my legislative district, as you know. I've got Bass Lake, I've got Schmidt Lake, I've got Medicine Lake, a whole host of them. These folks do a good job of managing their lakes, but here we are providing a disincentive for them to actually be doing what they've been doing for decades. So I would encourage you to reconsider that piece in particular. I just think it's a fee increase that is a recipe for actually more people not complying with the laws that we're trying to help our lakes on. So that's my concern there. But Representative Wagenius, too, I also wanted to talk to you a little bit about the pollinator piece. Are we talking about bees here? Are we looking at $700,000 for bees? Is that what the pollinator piece is? If you could help me out on that.
Representative Wagenius.
There are a variety of pollinators. Honeybees are one, but they're native bees. They're moths. They're butterflies. There are actually some small flies that are pollinators. These pollinate our crops. We do have big crops that don't take pollinators, but most of our crops do. Most of our crops do need pollinators, and you probably are aware of the that this issue has just been brought up by the colony collapse of honeybees. And this is a state that actually has a lot of honeybees that go honeybee. I don't know. They call them farmers, or let's call them farmers, or let's call them honeybee farmers, who have honeybees here in the summer and take them to California in the winter to pollinate things like the almonds, the great almond forests in California. They have had huge losses of bees. We cannot have a loss of pollinators and still have our foodstuffs. I think everybody in the Agriculture Committee recognized and talked about this issue. a lot. And what we were doing is, and I think there was, if I don't want to say there was consensus in the committee, but certainly nobody, there was a lot of expression of concern about our lack of pollinators and in what's going on with the honeybees. So what we were trying to provide is some areas are safe havens for honeybees, safe havens for pollinators, for flies, for moths, for butterflies, because we need to keep those pollinators. And we do have these state lands that can provide those safe havens. I think that is basically what is going on there. Let me also respond to you on you're saying what's the point of raising the fees for folks who voluntarily want to take out native species. And I think the response is going to come from the game and fish people who are saying, well, what was the point of my raising the game and fish fee if you're going to give it to subsidize homeowners who want to take away the very aquatic species that we want to keep for our fish? There's pushback coming on the other side, too. And that pushback from our fisher folks is just as strong as the pushback from your folks who do not want to pay.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, my folks have been paying. And what you're doing is, because you are lifting the cap and you're looking at lake associations that will have gone from $750 to $18,000, they're just not going to comply probably. You're going to see situations, unfortunately, of people that are not going to comply. Or it's going to be a situation where they're going to have their own applicator come in and treat this. And so instead of the DNR coming in once to monitor the application and the treatment and all this kind of stuff, you're going to see them having to come back several times. And I think that is counterintuitive to what we want to do and achieve. And you are not going to stop people from wanting to do this. So this is what they're looking to do. This is part of the reason of why they own a lake and they want to be able to access the lake. This is part of what they're going to do. And my concern is you've raised this fee, and I can't explain to me why the DNR would need to go from $750 to $18,000 on a lake. And just tell me how you really are going to solve this problem, because you're going to have folks that are going to go to an individual basis. So instead of one time DNR coming out, they're going to be coming out 20, 30 times for one lake. How does that help?
Rep. Tony Guineas.
This program has been costing $1 million a year. And it's been subsidized. So your homeowners have been subsidized. The problem I see is the pushback we're getting on the other side. The game and fish folks raised their fee because they wanted more areas for their fish. I mean, that was one of the reasons. I mean, game is obviously a big reason, too. But there was a fish fee increase. And what the fish need is the very aquatic plants that your homeowners want to take out. Remember, it's free to take out any kind of invasive species. But if you want to take out the species that are sitting there where the fish go to spawn, I don't think your game and fish folks are going to like that.
Okay, Representative Hobart. You're not?
Mr. Chair, the only thing I was trying to get is a total number of FTEs. You rattled off a whole bunch of numbers, blah, 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 and I wasn't able to keep up with the computation. So
I will add it up and give it to you. I mean, I could add it up right now, but maybe it would be better just to not take the committee's time for me to add.
When you get a chance, add that up, then
we will do that.
And then share it later. Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, I was trying to find the where on the spreadsheet and was or is there information on how much, or is there still ethanol producer payments? I see that we're now changing language from years gone by, and now it's biofuels, and we have a biofuel mandate. And so where would I find all of that, either in the bill or on the spreadsheet? And I guess that's number one. And number two, do we still have ethanol producer payments in the bill?
The ethanol producer payments are gone. And I will show you on the spreadsheet, if you'll turn to the first.
Mr. Chair, Representative, if you turn to the second page of the spreadsheet under the Department of Agriculture, the value-added products, that is what was formerly used for the ethanol producer payments. The last payments were made in fiscal year 12, I believe, and now that base funding that was used for the ethanol producer payments is now in that category.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lagina, so what is that base funding being used for now if it's not for ethanol?
There is only a small amount going into the fund now, but I'm going to it's the agri stuff, and we're going to find the language for you just in just a moment. This was one question I wasn't expecting. It's on page 7 of the bill. And you can see that there is an underlying program here that the department has had for next gen payments and or next gen looking at what next generation is going to be, and there's a committee that looks at that. But there's also going to be additional money, and this is general fund money, for other things. And what the commissioner had given us in I don't want to call it a spreadsheet, but the commissioner had made some recommendations of what he intended to spend the money on. One was developing new markets, and you're going to look at down on line 7.23, because what we are we're asking here is reporting for how this money is spent. So this is a reporting thing, and it says anticipated accomplishments in the following areas: developing new markets for Minnesota farmers by providing more fruit and vegetables for Minnesota school children. This is a farm-to-school, what's called a farm-to-school program. And then on facilitating the startup, modernization, or expansion of livestock operations. This is helping. The emphasis here is on small or transitioning farmers, both in livestock and in non-livestock. Research in conventional or not or cover crops. I know that the folks from wheat came and talked to me, but so did folks who said that that farmers could now have a second crop after soybeans. We need to work on developing that second crop, which could be an oil-producing crop. So we've had some good discussions about that. And then there's the biofuel and other renewable energy development, including small renewable energy projects for rural residents. That's what the money will most likely be spent on. I can't tell you because we have not put a constraint on the commissioner. Rather, we have said, please report back about what you were spending on this money on.
Representative Kamer. Representative Dittmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have the same concern that Representative McNamara and Representative Anderson has had. I've been working with several lake associations in my area in the northeastern Washington County area in Chisago, and also Chisago County. And actually, I think it was summer before last, we actually got some DNR people out on a lake in my area with a problem with the invasive milfoil problems, and finally the Lake Association came to me, and I would come out on the lake if the DNR was out there with us, and we got out on a pontoon, went out on the lake, and we had to stop several times just to get the weeds out of the impeller. And the problem is that the policy that the DNR has is that you're only allowed to treat 15% of the acreage on the lake. And this particular lake, there was milfoil all over the place in the center of the lake. There are some homeowners that couldn't get out of their dock and get the boat out onto the lake to do the fishing. And my experience is that most of your homeowners on lakes, they take care of their lake. It's where they live. And these homeowners also pay pretty hefty property taxes for living on the lake. And I know a lot of homeowners that are on fixed incomes. They've been on the lake for years, and many of them are finding that they can't even afford to stay on the lake anymore. But given that, there's questions, because I was learning about, I've never lived on the lake, but I've asked questions why we're out on that pontoon, and my question was, well, what is your fee? Well, in this case, the fee was $700+, and then I asked, well, who pays for this fee? Well, the lake, the people that live on the lake. And then I asked, well, who purchased the chemicals? Well, the lake shore owners, they have to purchase the chemicals, and they have to be chemicals prescribed by the DNR. And then my third question, well, who has to hire the companies to come out and treat the lakes? Well, the homeowners, the taxpayers, they have to hire that. So basically, the homeowners are basically doing all the work, and they're paying for the service to treat these lakes. And then my question is, if the amount of acreage that they are allowed to treat, does that increase the fees? You know, we're looking at a fee that could go up to $18,000. Right now the policy of the DNR is that 15% of the lake can be treated for treatment. If also the DNR says, well, now you can treat 50% or 60%, does that increase the fee?
Yes.
Representative Wagenius.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Milfoil is an aquatic invasive species. And if you'll look on line 115.14, it says there is no permit fee for, and then if you look on line 115.18, invasive aquatic plant management permits. So you're dealing with something very different than what Representative Anderson is dealing with. So that's one thing. I can't talk to you about the specific acreage. That's a DNR rule issue, and I can't talk to you about that, but I can talk to you about the fee. And I can also talk to you about a couple of other things. We passed through this committee the LCCMR bill, and in that bill there is, I think, I'd have to go back and look for the exact $6 or $7 million for the aquatic invasive research that is going on at the University of Minnesota. And what one of the things that the University of Minnesota is looking for is kind of biological controls for these various invasives that we have. Invasives are a huge issue for us. But so our long-term strategy, I think, has to be managing by finding things like a beetle. There's a leafy spurge beetle that gets the leafy spurge, which is another invasive that's a terrestrial. We've got to be looking for those kinds of things, and that's long-term, and that's research. And I think this committee has done a good job. This community has done a really good job of creating this aquatic invasive species research center at the university. But also, I will tell you, in this bill, there is $1 million each year for grants to lake associations. Well, for grants, I wouldn't necessarily have to go to lake associations, for, to local units of government for management of aquatic invasive species, and that's a pretty broad what the money can be spent for. And if you will ask Representative Kahn, when she brings up her bill, there is $3 million each year for clean water partnership grants, and that's mainly would go to lake associations, again, to help them with some of their planning and dealing with these. It could be used for that, I think, for some of these aquatic invasive species. It's a huge issue, and we do not have our arms around these aquatic invasives yet.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Raguinius. If you look, if I heard you right, you said on line 114.34, and I'll read, the fee may not be charged for, and you crossed out permits issued connected with purple, loose leaf, loose strife control, or lake wide. Then you've eliminated erosion milfoil. So there is a fee for milfoil, if I read that right.
I would have to ask DNR if we have a conflict here that I don't understand.
It's on page 114, 115. Actually, on 115, the line 115.1, you have crossed out the milfoil control programs. So obviously, there is a fee for lake home associations for that, if I read that right.
Is somebody here from DNR that could respond to that?
Crossing that out and substituting this, right? There's no permit fee for an apartment.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. I'm looking at line 115.18, and this is what I think Representative Wagenius was referring to. There is no permit fee for the transporting of aquatic plants, permit to remove floating bogs, and an invasive aquatic plant management permits, or permits applied for, it goes on to talk about. Representative Detmer, could you give me the line that you're specifically talking about?
If you look on page 114, it starts on line 114.34, and it reads, the fee may not be charged for, and then there's a cross out.
It's just.
And then on page 115, line 115.1, you raise some water milfoil control programs.
Mr. Chairman, this is rather confusing, and we will pull together a table for you on this. The change on 115.1, you can see we're striking after lakewide Eurasian water milfoil control programs, and what we're doing is we're inserting lakewide language that's or baywide invasive aquatic plant management permits. So we're actually making it more, we're making it broader rather than more specific. So currently the language would say that it's for a fee, maybe not, the fee may not be charged for permits issued in conjunction with purple loose strife control or lakewide plant management fees. But now we're saying lakewide or baywide. In the case of Lake Minnetonka, they're doing baywide, they're doing full bay treatments. We're working with the Corps of Engineers and some other research scientists to treat whole bays of Eurasian water milfoil. Gray's Bay, I think, was one example. Actually, we were out there touring last fall and talking about that. So now we're saying that lakewide or baywide invasive species. So there's no charge for those programs. And then also the invasive aquatic plant management permits, there's no fee for that as well. So the strikeout of Eurasian water milfoil on 115.1 is a good thing for everybody, because now we're expanding this program from lakewide to also include baywide. So it's I apologize for the confusion on this, it's not doing what you think it does.
Okay.
So we want to be able to treat invasive species and do it in an effective manner. getting back to the fee part, it's kind of what Representative Anderson was speaking about, that Lake Association may be paying $18,000 now. Right now, there's an incentive with the $750 cap at $35 per person. Once you reach that $750 cap, which is about 20 people, from 20 people above until you reach that 15% of the littoral zone are basically free. So the way the program works right now is we're incentivizing treatments of the lakes up to 15% of that littoral zone, which is the depth of 0 to 15 feet where the plants are. So we're trying to make sure that everybody pays the $90 rather than provide an incentive to treat the maximum amount of the lakes. We need to go back and continue working with stakeholders and other people on this program. I believe in the future we can probably operate it more efficiently so that these costs can come down. But right now, to have boaters and hunters and anglers pay for these costs from our position in the governor's budget, it's not the right people to be paying for these costs.
Representative Denver.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Meyer. One question I had also was, let's say if you're at 15%, that's your policy. Now, let's say if you negotiate with the lakeshore, you've been out of the lake, and you can see that we need to go more than 15%. Does that increase the fee then, too, if you go to 40% or 50%?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Detmer, no, the fee is right now in this bill, it's $90. So it's not a per square foot fee. It's a per property owner, basically. And that 15% is only on native aquatic plants. So what we're talking about is aquatic, basically it's fish habitat, right? We have trees and we have prairies for large animals and birds and things like that. This is where the fish live. So, but when it's an invasive species, we can go and we do go above that 15% to make sure that we're removing the Eurasian water milfoil and those invasives that we do need to get out of there so that they can be replaced with more beneficial plants. So I hope that answers some of your questions.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe one last question. If you take a look at the fee structure right now, we're at $750. Apparently, that's what 20% of the cost. We're looking at $1 million. If you figure that out across the board, perhaps that Anderson was pointing this out to me, that maybe the max, if you go by that same formula, the max would only be $3,750. Instead of $18,000, that just if you're just doing the math.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Detmer, for each lake it's going to be different. There's a lot of lakes out there that have 10, 15 people, 5 people that are treating it. I know I live across the street from a lake, and that lake association varies. Actually, what we're seeing is with the water levels and things like that, people are treating less than what the maximums allow. So the hitting, I can't tell you what each lake's going to hit because it's up to each property owner, right? So, and there are no fee options. You can mechanically remove aquatic plants off of your shoreline up to a certain number of square feet. I want to say 2,000 square feet with no permit at all. So these are just for spraying chemicals onto the lakes to kill the aquatic plant habitat.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Meyer.
I think it would be helpful, Mr. Chair, we could have from DNR that in writing, and we'll share it with committee members, because I think there is the expectation that if you take up one native plant, you have to have this fee, and that's not true.
Mr. Chairman, members, we will provide detailed information with invasive and native plant management and costs and permit applications and things like that, so I can help you understand what the impact of this is. So,
okay, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wiginius, I was looking through the bill and I didn't see, when will this part of the bill take effect? When will this part of the bill, the fee increases for the aquatic management fee increases, when will that take effect?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I could probably answer that. These will be for next year, basically. People are applying or have received their permits already. The more proactive people want to be ready to go if and or when, I prefer to think the lakes thaw out. But, you know, you need to apply these chemicals at a certain temperature. It's always in the spring. So this bill wouldn't go into effect until July 1st. So it would be for the next, it would be next treatment site, next treatment year.
Would you tell us, Chair, with the committee what chemicals are being used?
Representative Guinness?
Yes, I
okay, Representative Guinness.
Yes, I would ask Mr. Meyer to share with us what chemicals are being used. And I ask this because these chemicals are not necessarily good for our fish. And that's another problem we have.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, I will include that on this fact sheet. There are several chemicals that we're using that are permitted right now. And actually, I believe there was language that passed several years ago that dealt with those chemicals as well. So
we were using 2,4-D, which was terrible for our fish. So I expect that DNR does not permit that anymore. But even the things that are being permitted are not so good for the fish.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Meyer, a couple of things. When you do that report, if you can also include what the chemicals that are used for invasive aquatic plant management permits that don't require a fee, I'd like to see those chemicals too. And I'm still not clear, though, you said it wouldn't be take effect until next year. Does it actually say that in the bill? Because if you look at the end of Article 5, it says that this takes effect of August of 2013, and I know that there are some that do a treatment in the fall, and I want to know if this applies to those that do a treatment in the fall.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, you're correct where these fees would go into effect July 1st, because they are related to the budget. But we can clarify that if there is a lake, for example, if you need to do a late season algae treatment or something like that, I think we can work with some language that makes sure that these fees don't go into effect until January 1 of 2014, possibly. I don't think that would be detrimental to the program.
Okay, seeing no more discussion, Representative Wagenius renews her motion that House File 976, first engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and placed on the general register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Wagenius. And now we go to the bill by Representative Kahn. And that's House File 1183, which deals with the
I'll be right back.
Legacy funds.
We have so many people. Mr. Chairman,
okay, we're just getting organized here. There's been a fair amount of paperwork between the two bills, and there is an amendment that is in the process of being distributed at this point. So, Representative Kahn, do you want to make a motion to get the bill before us?
Yes. I'd like to move that House File 1183 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Rules Committee.
Thanks.
Okay, that motion is before us. Okay. And Representative Kahn, you indicated to me that you have some amendments and you'd like to take those up first and then explain the bill after the amendments. Is that still the game?
Yes, that would be fine.
Okay, the first amendment that I have listed is the A51.
What is this one?
1183A51. It says that it's technical.
Yep.
Yes. Yes, this is... Yes, this is essentially a technical amendment to fix some numbers and to add some stuff that was apparently left out of the engrossment.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Kahn, the next amendment that I have on my list here is the A52 amendment dealing with parks.
Yes, this was an item that was in the bill. There was then, it was fairly strong in terms of, no, this is, I think we have a substitute amendment from
this
A52.
Is the, this is the Scheer Brothers one that you
well,
originally
we have a substitute, yes. This one caused some dissension between the parties, including DNR. We have a compromise amendment. It's amazing what you can do when you get everyone who's angry about something in the same room talking to each other instead of yelling at each other. The A56 amendment is a substitute amendment from the A52.
A56.
Yes.
Okay.
So
that's
I would like to move the A56 amendment. If Representative Loeffler were here, she could talk about it for about an hour. Yeah. I do have a handout. I do have a handout which explains the issue, but this would put in a program of the Parks Board that was based on a project that received legacy fund in the past, and this is this now rewriting of the amendment to A56 instead of A52 has the agreement of DNR and the Minneapolis Parks Board. So it's a much more acceptable amendment than the A56.
And when I say at least, she's done a lot of the historical research and so on that she's been very.
Now, I do have a handout if anyone would.
Okay, that's
like
what
to see it.
About. Yeah. Okay, the motion by Representative Kahn is to adopt the A56 amendment. Any discussion? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kahn, I came in all wound up when I saw the A52. Is the A56, are we just seeing that just here in the last minute or two for the first time? I'm trying to understand. I've never seen
yes.
this
yes.
unless I missed it.
Yes, the A56 was just worked out with conversations with Mr. Meyer, and Mr. Meyer is here to say that whereas he is totally unaccepting of the A52, he accepts the A56, if you want to bring him to the front.
So there's peace in the valley, so
yes.
to speak. Okay, did you want to hear from Mr. Meyer? Or?
No, Representative Kahn is always truthful to me, Mr. Chair, so I assume, but just so the public and everybody, this is brand new policy that we're putting in here, but I support the policy change
Great.
From the A52 was really bad. Thank you, yeah. Representative.
No, A52,
the
A56 is the one that's before us.
The restoration of the island was in the bill
yes.
in committee at one time.
Yes.
And,
yep. and then we took it out
and
when there was
a dispute over the language, and now there's peace in the valley
yes.
in terms of the yes. new language is the way I understand it. So it was heard in the in Representative Kahn's committee, or the issue was.
And I did have to apologize to people involved in this for using four-letter words. Fortunately, they weren't on tape, but I did apologize. So.
So the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion okay. carried. I did tell
okay.
Representative Kahn we use clean language in this committee. So,
still not good.
So far,
still not good.
Okay.
There was one more amendment, which was all agreed on too by everyone, and we don't.
That's the A57 or
yes.
45.
Yes. The A57, and this was in the bill. It will also be before the, and it's easiest if we put it back in the bill at this time. This was, again, a project that was funded with legacy funding, and then the rules were supposed to be done to put it in place, and the time ran out for the rules, so this just extends the time limit for the rules. It will also be before the GovOps committee next week.
Okay, now you need to move the amendment.
I move the A57 amendment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion on this amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Holder.
As a matter of process, these amendments, you know, are time stamped very recently. I think just it might be a common courtesy to ask if there's anybody in the audience that opposes or wants to provide. I mean, some of us aren't on these committees. We don't know the issues, but it makes me nervous when something's brought out so last minute to not even ask if there's people that want to come.
Well, I did ask because the concern, as I understood it, had been DNR and Mr. Meyer, and I did ask if Mr. Meyer wanted to comment to make a good point. If there's anybody that wants to come forward, that's fine. Representative Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. The amendment before you is something that we do support. This would allow us to finish the rulemaking of the critical area rule. It was in the legacy bill previous to this. So.
And people had an opportunity to engage at that point as well. And Representative Kahn, Mr. Meyer. So on the previous amendment, being that you're at the desk, I mentioned that you had reached an agreement, or the department had, and just to reconfirm that, even though we adopted the amendment, if anybody else wants to comment on it, we'll give them that opportunity. Representative Holberg made a good point, being that these were in the previous bill, but in some variation, but just want to make sure that if anybody wants to comment, that we have an open process. Representative Holberg.
Well, and Mr. Chair, that was my point, and that we can say, and I don't question Chair Kahn's word at all, but sometimes what happens is lobbyists and legislators, and we kind of forget that there's a public and maybe average citizens, there might be somebody that resides in this area, on the river or whatever, and there might be members of the public or other people that should have a right.
We're opening it up for anybody that would like to comment. The one that had been most involved was the department on the issue. The public had been engaged. Is that right, Representative Kahn?
Well, the public is
in your committee.
Yes, and the public is completely supported. Again, I have a summary of Representative Loeffler's our lecture on it, if you'd like to see it. But the Minneapolis Park Board and this River First project has been having hearings on it for well over a year. And it's a very broad committee. And I'm apologizing for the. I admitted the A56 amendment is late beyond any point, but it was a modification that took the anger out of the A52 amendment, which was in on time, and the other amendment, which has a time stamp of 8:34 on it, was only because it turns out, believe it or not, last night all the revisers people and all the people who do those kinds of things were not here at night, and a very deserved one day leaving, not doing 24 hours. So that's the only reason why that one, you know, was later than it should have been.
Okay. Mr. Meyer, I think that's all for you at this point. So is there anybody in the audience that... excuse me, I guess, Mr. Meyer? You can't get away yet.
Mr. Meyer, I would like you to stay there. Members... This absolutely cannot be here in this committee and move forward right now. This is reincarnating the Mississippi River critical area rulemaking process with never having gone through the Environment Committee. I understand you can do a floor amendment for this, but Mr. Chair, you did have, and I agree with Representative Kahn, she modified the 52 amendment that met the deadline because it stamped 5/18 last night. This is a policy that Mr. Meyer knows that I'm probably the absolute only one in our caucus that's willing to look at the idea that this be finished some way, somehow. This is a huge environmental policy issue that the department and the administration have not brought forward and gotten Representative Hansen's bill heard so we could discuss this issue. This actually got adopted momentarily for a couple hours in Representative Kahn's committee when I walked out, because I'm probably the only one on our side of the aisle that knows. Isn't this the Mississippi River Critical Area
Yes.
continuation? Right. This has got nothing to do with the island in Minneapolis. This is a continuation of an issue that Representative Hortman and Representative Abler have dealt with in an unbelievable issue on the northern end. I did on the southern end with Denmark Township and Ninninger Township in Hastings, and have told the department to bring the issue forward so we could continue this in a positive way. This is huge environmental policy that's never been discussed in the Environment Committee. Representative Dill asked to hear this bill if it's going to be in there, and you removed it. And now, unless I'm missing the boat, you're asking to put it right back in here now. This needs to be on the floor, and it didn't meet the deadline anyway, Mr. Chair. Your deadline was 8 o'clock this morning, and it's stamped 8:34, and it's brand new. And I don't know that Representative Hortman's aware of this being in here. I don't even see Mr. Lockishmo, if I'm not mistaken. He's the DNR guy that I worked with for 4 years on the issue. This was done when I walked out to use the restroom, Mr. Chair, in Representative Kahn's committee, and nobody even knew what they were voting on. It was taken back out, and now it was almost slipped under the guise that it had something to do with the Minneapolis Island. No. If we're voting on this, I'm asking for a roll call, absolutely, because it's against the rules, and it's huge policy, and I'm going to ask Representative Dill to go back to his previous request that it go back to the committee. This bill needs to go to Environment Committee if this goes on, and it hadn't met the deadline. No. I'm adamantly opposed to that amendment going in this bill. It's wrong. Well,
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, this is dealing with policy that is so that is in statute. It's already in statute. It's funded. It's, again, it's increasing a legislative issue. The only thing this is doing is extending a deadline. We have an automatic deadline where at such points when you said you do rules, if you haven't done it by then, it expires. This just extends this. We did check with Representative Dill, who did not, and specifically does not want to see it in the policy committee. This is such a minor, this extension of time is such a minor, and has nothing to do, it doesn't have anything to do with the island, and I don't, sorry if I said anything that implied that it did. All this does is extend the authority to adopt rules, and the adoption of rules is the public discussion that we need to have about that. And the problem was that for some reason that was delayed until the time expired. I mean, the reason it wasn't done legislatively was that rules needed to be adopted. I did explain why it missed the deadline by 34 minutes, because it turns out that last night, for the first time in I don't know how many weeks, the revisor's office was not available at some, what most of us consider a fairly early time, like 7 p.m. or something like that. There was nobody in there, so we couldn't get the official form. You know, the email form was totally out. We could not get that. There is no, again, we checked with the people who were involved in taking it out of the bill, Mr. Myers and Representative Dill, and they had no objection for it going in.
Just for the record, Mr. Chair, I had nothing to do with taking it out of the bill.
Yeah. So it was, you know, and it's, you know, I think, I mean, I've been here an awfully long time, and doing something like extending a period to do rules when a deadline wasn't made, if that's not as close to a technical amendment as anything could possibly be, I don't know what is. And it is in statute. It was a legacy project. It was funded with legacy money to do it in the first place, and it's just dealing with the fact that we don't always get things done on time.
Representative McNamara?
Well, Mr. Chair, I understand that this is just extending the rulemaking authority, and it's a bill that Representative Hansen and my senator, Senator Sieben, had now, I believe, about 4 years ago. It was extremely controversial in the process, never got completed because it was destined for failure. It couldn't be completed in the 18 months allowed. It was a huge issue. Representative Hortman had public meetings with hundreds of people there attending. This is an issue, and Mr. Meyer, this commissioner and the previous commissioner know I'm interested in resolving this issue, but I said we need to bring it before the Environment Committee and discuss this because it's got big implications. The underlying bill, I believe, needs to be fixed for it to be done. Or, as I mentioned to Representative Hansen, have Governor Dayton do a new executive order, which is another possibility. But this is in the legacy bill. Where's the 100 grand coming from? Is this coming out of legacy money that we're going to finish the rulemaking with? I don't know where the Mr. Chair, this, if it's going to be discussed in this bill, it should be on the House floor where Representative Hortman and her constituents and my constituents in Denmark and Nininger Township have reason to be concerned that they can't develop their property. This is the one that dealt with the brewery in St. Paul, the successful hometown brewery on top of the rocks down there on West 7th Summit. We had an unbelievable discussion. This is a huge deal, and to do it in ways and means, this environment policy, I'm sorry, I'm relying on the fact that it's 34 minutes late. If that's what it takes to get this discussion to be properly done, this should not be here now. There's no one's aware of this issue. And I would love to, the person that I should be discussing, if we're going to discuss it in committee and we're going to ram it through, where is Mr. Lockishmo? Because he's the guy from DNR that can tell you how controversial it is and how close we were to resolving it at one time, but this is not the right way to do it.
Exactly. Just to make it clear on the timing, the instructions that went out were that the amendments were to be in by 8 o'clock. If you were not able to meet that deadline, you had the obligation to prepare for distribution your own amendment. So it's not late from that standpoint. Basically had to be somewhat flexible as we move forward because these major finance bills are coming back before us rather rapidly. And so that was the request, 8 o'clock today, or prepare your own amendments. That's why they were distributed. The staff for the committee didn't prepare the amendments. We had to give them some time to get everything in the packets that we had in advance. But Representative Kahn, I want to get clear.
One last thing.
This was in the legacy bill.
Yes.
It's being funded by the legacy funds. And you
we
did have a
out.
Discussion in committee on this issue.
Yes. And we did. We took it out after discussion with the Speaker, Representative Dill, and Mr. Meyer, who wanted all, they were actually focused on another piece of policy, which we had discussed extensively. Representative Dill said he just picked things that he said were possible policy things, although they're all, they're based on legacy appropriations. There was one piece that he was really concerned about that we had spent several hours discussing, both in Representative Wagenius' committee and in my committee, and that one we did not bring out. That was all the one that Representative Dill wanted out, and that was totally taken out. The whole point of this is to have exactly the discussion. Remember, this is in state law, and the whole point of this is to have, with the rules, the adoption of the rules issue, to have exactly the discussion Representative McNamara wants. And it, again, we would not, this is, as I said, it's just a minor extension of a time to do a rules process which does exactly what Representative McNamara wants to do. So I would suggest that he remove his request for a roll call, and I would suggest that we vote on this, and I'm willing, it has another stop in rules and then another stop on the floor. I'm perfectly willing to have the complete discussion there. But I think it's the way the public sees it is by it moving forward in this bill as opposed to being popped off as a floor amendment, even 24 hours in advance.
In regards to what Representative Holberg commented on earlier, is there anybody in the audience that wants to comment on the amendment? We want to make sure that if anybody is present, they have that opportunity. And as you point out, the bill will again be up in rules for a totally unrelated issue. But Representative Kahn?
You know, again, the basic point is that I think that this was this is totally, if any Republican were to bring this to me for a Republican issue, and I didn't even know that this was a partisan issue, I would completely accept it. I would just think, it's an example of government not functioning as well as it should because it didn't get things done in a timely manner. And I think one of the issues that we note is that sometimes these things take more time than we think they should have. And sometimes we don't guess how much time they ought to have at the first time.
We have a couple of four other people that have indicated they'd like to comment, so we better get to that. McNamara, were you done?
Mr. Chair, just to Representative Kahn's point about the roll call, I'm willing to wait until after we do your bill till the end if we want to collect the members and let everybody have a chance to vote on the roll call, because I know there's other committees going on. I do want a roll call on it. If the chair's ruling that it's in order to vote on it now, I want a roll call on this amendment, but I want to give everybody that's on this committee that may be in the building an opportunity to weigh in on this, because this is, if you're for any kind of transparency at all, and Mr. Meyer knows all too well, I beg the department to bring this forward and have a discussion in my committee for 2 years, and the governor never made it a priority, and we're slipping it in the dark of the morning, and we need to be transparent and have people vote for it if they're going to do it.
Well, that's why I tried to clarify that this has been talked about in the legacy committee or was in the bill, and so there has been prior discussion. But at any rate, we've got, I think, Representative Anderson next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kahn, I just noticed on the amendment that you've got on here that this section is effective retroactively to 2009. Can you tell me why it would?
Because that's when the rules, Mr. Chairman, because that's when the authority to adopt the rules expired.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, does then that mean that the money that you've got tied to this $100,000 on the rulemaking, is that for all of those years or just for the current year?
It does.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, as Representative Ann, as I understand it, this is for going forward. That money had been appropriated and was never spent because the rules weren't done. This is the estimate of what the cost for the rulemaking is. So it's a one-time, it goes on now because it wasn't spent prior to,
Okay, we have Representative Hulbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's quorum for this committee? How many members?
I don't know.
It'd be 17.
And I would just hope that before we take the roll call that we would actually have a quorum in the room to be able to conduct business.
We have several members that are on hand, so if you have a quorum call, we would obviously give an opportunity to those people that are in the Education Committee and Transportation an opportunity to come back up. But we had a quorum at the beginning, and so if there is a quorum call, that would be the process that is generally used. Okay, Representative, who do we have next here? Mahoney. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, I'm trying to figure out which this is. Now, about 4 or 5 years ago, we put something like this in, if I remember right. And then I got contacted by almost a dozen businesses along the river that said that they could not expand or change their particular business development plans because of what these rules were being classified as, approximately 1,500 feet back from the shoreline and a variety of other things underneath this ruling. And then I'm just trying to figure this out. And then the rules lapsed in 2009 or 2010?
Mr. Chairman, it wasn't that the rules lapsed, it's that the time for the rules-making process lapsed. The rules were never adopted, as I understand. And there's a bill that I showed you, the bill that's just introduced, which you looked at yesterday, which would be the greatest thing for your business.
I'm sorry, what was that, Representative Kahn? I didn't hear it.
There was a bill that I showed you yesterday that's just being introduced that would be the greatest thing for your businesses along the river. It really understands the concept.
Actually, Representative Kahn, I looked at that bill, and it is not the greatest thing for any business along my river. No. and I would probably be opposed to that. But be that as it may, what I'm trying to figure out is, are we restarting the process of regulating what business can and cannot go along our riverfronts in Minneapolis and in St. Paul?
We're restarting a rules process that will then discuss that in a public format so that we will be able to, so that we'll be able to have the kind of public input into it, and we'll be able to have the understanding. The thing that's so important for cities, and that's why this bill I'm introducing, which is probably irrelevant to this, is that the rules for cities along rivers, so that when we want cities to be like the Seine or the Elbe or the Arno, in places where there's a vibrant riverfront community, are not the same as we need for the natural parts of rivers in northern Minnesota or southern. And so we need to have that kind of discussion, which has the input of the cities and the city businesses into it, to understand how certain businesses, you know, when you're looking at urban riverfronts, there are certain businesses that need to be able to be right at the edge of the river, and that they don't want to have that kind of setback that we want to require on our more natural parts of rivers. And the issues are connected, and all this does is just say we didn't have time to do the rules, and we're going to extend the process, and that gives everyone the kind of public input that we hope we'll get.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
So, Representative Kahn, has the city, because I've gotten no direction from the city of St. Paul on whether this is a good idea or not, because this has just essentially came up. And again, when these rules were presented 4 years ago, my emails and my phones lit up saying, what are you thinking voting for something like this? So this is not reconstituting that board? Because that board proposed that up to 1,500 feet from the riverfront become a corridor of not being able to develop. So I'm trying to find out, has my city had a chance to talk to you about this particular issue?
Well, again, someone who's been more involved in it from the start than I am, who can do it. What I am saying is that putting this in this bill at this time and putting the rulemaking process going forward instead of saying we're never going to do this again gives everyone the transparency and the ability to deal with it.
Mr. Chair, if I could help. And I know that members from St. Paul are very concerned, particularly about Summit Brewing and the potential expansion. And I think there will be a hearing in government operations on Tuesday on the extension of the rule. So that gives an opportunity for public input on that. To the issue and the content of it, yes, members are correct that this was very controversial when this went through. We went through, I believe, 9 committees at the time. The rulemaking started. The rulemaking got to the end of Governor Pawlenty's term, and the clock ran out, and it was not finished. Currently, the Mississippi River Critical Area operates under the 1978 Albert Quay Executive Order. I think, and it's my understanding, the opportunity for extending the rulemaking gives the DNR and the businesses the chance to have reality of today rather than even 90 or back in 2009. So it's a reboot of that whole process versus having the rules that were beginning to be promulgated, which surely there were concerns were, be implemented. So I see this as the opportunity to have that public input begin. I've talked not specifically on the extension, but I know the concerns were there. I know that there was the concern to have their voice heard, and I think this gives the opportunity for that. Plus, we're not stuck at May of 2009 in terms of the reality which would be involved. And if I'm wrong on that, I'd like to have DNR correct me. But that's my understanding, is the expansion or the extension gives us the chance to restart, get that public input in, and look at the reality as of today, 2013, rather than even 2009, because we've had businesses that have expanded. Summit has been growing, and there have been, so rather than fix at a static point, you have the ability to recognize reality today. If that helps, Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
She's been too. You know, and it's, yeah, I don't often do it, delve into the environmental stuff, and I'm not going to go any farther than this. But Representative McNamara indicated that, you know, Representative Dill might be very interested in seeing this, and it's one of those rare times where I'm going to agree with my colleague from south of the city of St. Paul that this might be something that you might be putting your bill at risk of being pulled back into a different committee. So having said that, you know, Mr. Chair, I think I've voiced my concern, and I will let the will of the committee move forward.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me assure you, Representative Mahoney, I have talked to Representative Dill within, I don't know now if it's within the last 2 hours or so, and he has no objection to this. It was kind of in a fit of lumping a bunch of things together. He does not want to see this. We've talked to him about it. We've talked to him. I would be quite confident if we would get him here, he would totally say that. We have talked specifically about this, and he has no objection to it. He does not want to see it in his committee. He thought the policy issues were done, and it will be heard, and the rules extension part will be heard in the GovOps committee.
And Mr. Chair, I need to correct something. The staff informed me the GovOps committee will be meeting on Wednesday rather than on Tuesday. So
we do have the number for the quorum. I said 17. It's actually 18 because we have a 34-member committee. We do have a quorum present. I would like to go to a vote while we have a quorum present because people are busy in other committees. Representative Fulbert, did you still have an interest in the quorum?
I'm glad that there is a quorum to vote on this amendment. I think it is
pretty a busy time, and both sides have accommodated. When you were in the majority, when we were at a busy time, we accommodated other committees. But we have brought folks in so that we're at a quorum. So,
Mr. Chair, we appreciate that. We think this is a controversial amendment that's kind of come in at the last minute, and at a minimum, there should be people in the room to constitute a quorum if we're going to have a roll call on that.
We do have a quorum here. I'm talking about after the vote now because I would like to be able to tell the folks that are having dual assignments at this point that they can go back to those committees. But if need be, we can always call them back. I'm just looking to the future. Okay, we got a couple more people that have questions on the amendment, and then we will vote. Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, were you wanting to just move to a vote? I would certainly pass if you needed to. Otherwise,
it would be very quick. We have people who want to get back to their other committees.
So. And actually, I wanted to just follow up with Representative Hansen because he said just one thing. You're concerned about Summit Brewery. Well, it's not just that. St. Paul has, or what is it, 13 miles from one border to the other. We always turned our backs on the river. Now we want lots of people to come to the river all along that stretch. But to make them come to the river, there have to be lots of different uses. So there has to be a fishing pier. There have to be restaurants. There's a lot of activity, which I'm sure there is on those grand rivers that you mentioned. And that's what we're just wanting assurance. None of this gets in the way of a fully, you know, a developed waterfront with lots of activity that brings people there to enjoy that space.
And Mr. Chair, I would agree.
I would agree too, and I think the best way to get there is through this rules process. We really don't want to do this by a legislative process.
Okay, Representative Holberg, and then Mahoney. Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to my colleague, Representative Hausman, and to my colleagues at the desk. In that 13 miles of riverfront that St. Paul enjoys within its city, and I don't disagree, we need to bring multiple things to it, but there's almost 10,000 jobs directly related on that river within 1,500 feet of each shoreline. So are you going to stand here and tell me that you are not, this particular amendment does not affect those 10,000 jobs?
I am saying, Mr. Chairman, I am saying that the rules process that we will go through will have an adequate hearing on that issue. And I would, you know, depends what, at sometimes you affect 1,000 jobs and you bring 2,000 jobs in instead. You know, I mean, that's why we often put these things to a public rules hearing process instead of trying to do it within the limited constraints of the time of a legislative session.
Okay, that concludes, I think, the discussion on the amendment. The clerk will take the roll.
Carlson?
Aye.
Abler, excused. Anderson, yes. Anzell?
Yes.
Atkins?
No.
Beard? Excused. Beinart?
Yes.
Clark?
Yes.
Davids? Dabney?
Aye.
Dean? Detmer? Gunther? Excused. Hackforth?
No.
Hausman?
Yes.
Hillstrom?
Yes.
Holberg?
No.
Hornstein? Excused. Huntley? Excused. Kahn?
Yes.
Lencheski?
Yes.
Lewin excused. Mahoney?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Marquardt? Excused. McNamara?
No.
Mullery?
Aye.
Norness excused. Paymar?
Pass.
Polowski?
No.
Poppy?
Yes.
Simon?
Yes.
Wagenius?
Yes.
Woodard? Beard?
Nay.
Paymar?
Pass.
I passed.
Passed.
The ayes 13, the nays 9, so the amendment prevails.
Thank you very much.
Representative Kahn on the bill.
Okay. Is there a bill? Just a second. Yeah. Okay. Well, this bill spends $530 million from the four legacy funds approved by the voters in the 2008 constitutional amendment. The bill, despite what you may have read, the bill funds 100% of the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council recommendations and does not alter the makeup of the council. The bill phases the Outdoor Heritage Fund into a two-year funding cycle to match the rest of the state budget and enhance the long-term vision of the Outdoor Heritage Fund projects. And I'll admit this showed, again, I think the really good working of committee process. I mean, Representative McNamara may not think it was quite good enough, but I came in with a proposal that went in a certain direction. Erdahl came back with an amendment that went in accepted part of my amendment, but went back on it, and then I then proceeded to work on that rendition. And even Representative McNamara will say that it's better than what I first did, even if he doesn't perfectly do it. But the bill makes bill makes investments in groundwater and surface water monitoring that will ensure future appropriations are spent in the most effective manner. Two important parts of the bill, three important parts of the bill, all of the parts that deal with environmental issues, all came through Representative Wagenius's committee. So it's not one committee, but these have been passed through through two committees with ample discussion of them. The bill focuses heavily on enhancing state and regional trail system, particularly making connections between trails. And it removes the debate over funding ratios between park systems by having all projects competing for funding. I do have, in order to adequately do this, we do have about four different staff people here. I don't know if you want me to continue going through the bill section by section, or you want me to deal with specific questions.
Need to adequately present your bill.
Well, I think there's a very, the members have the
people have spreadsheet. Basic information.
They have the spreadsheet on the bill. I think I've touched on the parts that are considered to be possibly controversial. In the issue, the biggest part of the controversy seemed to be on the the issue of a Metro Big Rivers Habitat project from the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Commission. And it was emphasized again and again that this didn't deal with any recreation aspects of parks. It only dealt with habitat aspects. And my one-line summation on this is that the duck that gets shot in Ashanti County probably stopped for lunch in Hennepin County, Dakota County, or Ramsey County. And the, again, one of the things, so the controversy was doing some of the appropriations in 2 years. We've left $50 million on the bottom line for the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Commission to work on in the next year. And following the legislative auditor's report and other reports, it was felt that we would like them to do a lot more work on oversight and on the ground looking at how projects are doing rather than the shuffling of papers that are needed for grant renewals that they've already decided on should be renewed. We did have a lot of testimony on this in the legislative committee, and we heard testimony from a variety of entities that receive funding through the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And those who expressed the preference to continue the single-year funding, but their testimony often seemed to contradict themselves. They had to say that their request to the Lasard Sams Commission was misinformed because they asked for more money than they could use, and they couldn't sort of answer that when asked that. Well, you asked for this amount extra. Was that just pie in the sky questions? But what we did do, and others such as the Outdoor Heritage Alliance were neutral on the issue, so we reflected that testimony by making changes to my initial recommendation by removing the second year funding, i.e. putting it back into the Lasard Sams base, from any group who specifically requested that. So we gave them exactly what they told us that they wanted to do. Again, I can go through the whole thing line by line. We've had pretty really good agreement, I think, on the arts and cultural heritage issue. Because there are three busts in the bill, it goes on to the Rules Committee, so it has three busts added to the Capitol. It goes on to the Rules Committee. There's nothing in here that isn't specifically related to previous legacy funding or specifically continuing a legacy that's been in the Capitol or in the state.
Okay, I think
I prefer to answer individual
questions.
You're
indicating you want to go to questions. The spreadsheet is available with the line-by-line information.
And I'll
any discussion on the
people here in great detail
the bill?
Answer any
discussion on the bill? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn, I think I'll do like you. I'll take them one at a time, the funds, and if it's all right, I'll start with the Outdoor Heritage Fund. I appreciate your movement on some of the bill. It's amazing how far you have to go yet to think that in your bill you spend $50 million willy-nilly, haphazardly in the second year of the biennium. Your idea that you should that we should consider two-year funding for Lassard Sands is something I actually support, and with Lassard Sands' recommendation, I think it would potentially be a good discussion. Members, these two files are the Lassard Sands files for the last 2 years. Each tab represents an individual project that we've looked at. I was lucky enough to be one of the members in the last biennium and in this biennium, one of the two Legislative House members on Lassard Sams, last time with Representative Lilly, this time with Representative Hansen. We spend hours and hours and hours looking at the projects and making recommendations. Unfortunately, Representative Kahn, where she's quick to say, I fund all the projects that are in there, yes, but unfortunately she goes ahead in the next year and she adds a bunch more, taking some of the funds precariously, dangerously, well below the legislative auditor's recommended amount for reserves. But there is $50 million in the second biennium spent without recommendation of the council. And it's really troubling when some of us have questioned projects in Lassard Sams in the past. We've done it with Lassard Sams process, gone to them and said, myself specifically, I questioned two of their projects last year, went to the council, and brought my concerns with them forward. Unfortunately, Representative Kahn, you did not do that. You did on your own the second year, and it's very troubling to me what you've done. And I certainly hope that you will when you get to conference committee with the Senate, because that's who we need to be the big person in the room, and the governor, to recognize that we can't willy-nilly just decide to throw this important money aside and just haphazardly spend it. So I don't know, Representative Kahn, what we can do. You continue to move in the correct direction. I certainly hope in regards to Lassard Sams that you look at what you're doing, because just to pick and choose the way you've picked and to add those $6 million of metro projects when they did not meet the criteria, they did not only make the second cut, they didn't make the first cut. They needed to come back with greater detail and explain the projects. I mean, I know you've modified the project at Theodore Worth, but really, are we going to spend Habitat money in Theodore Worth? Folks, do you know the consequences of a bicyclist getting hit by a flying turkey? That's what we're doing. We want to grow more turkeys in Theodore Worth Park because we have wild turkeys in the area. It's fantastic. Do we really want to grow more white-tailed deer and turkeys in Theodore Worth? Is that money, should it be spent on habitat money? It's amazing what we've done here with this project. And then the earmarks in it is, Representative Kahn, you've got a long ways to go for this bill to be the right thing for Minnesota and in regards to Lassard Sams. So that's just on that part of it, the habitat part, the metro parks in the first year. There's some of those projects are good. Unfortunately, they all were lopped, put together in one package. They would have been better on their own, where some of them, I think, would have gotten funded. I do believe if the package came back next year to Lassard Sams, a lot of those projects probably could get funded. So, Representative Kahn, I just wish that you would reconsider your idea. 2 year, I think, has got merit, but to just go around the Lassard Sams Council, I think, is really, really wrong.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Kahn,
I think I only object to two words in what Representative McNamara had, which is the concept of willy-nilly, and let me just get to that. First of all, we did go to his iteration of what the two-year project should be, i.e., going, specifically putting that into the planning for the next biennium. We did go through very seriously first of all, the Metro Parks project was a bill, one of the best pieces of legislative work that I've seen. It was a bill that was carried by two freshman legislators, Freiberg and Wills. They had 35 co-authors. That bill then went to the House Environment Financing Committee and the, because it was only a financial issue of losing funds, and then came to my committee. The problem that we argued was that the Lesage-Sams Committee never looked at the information that was given to them. I'll also point out that the Metro Parks people worked with the staff person from the Lesage-Sams Outdoor Heritage Commission, who is I've known for years, from the years that I worked with DNR, and I think is one of the best staff people in state government, including legislature and executive branch, and he helped them put together a project that he felt met the criteria. The issue is that the Mississippi Flyway is the most important natural resource habitat in not only the state, but the country and the continent. It is internationally recognized. And large portions of that happen to go through the metropolitan area. And, you know, I can take you. I saw fox. I live right next to a park, and there were fox tracks in the snow, actually, the other day. That is habitat. Do I like the fox tracks? No. We think they killed one of our geese earlier in the year, which was a matter of deep mourning in our community. And but the point is, these are habitat-directed processes. And the Lesage-Sams Commission did not look. And then when the whole thing went back to them, they did have an opportunity to look at this project after it had been clearly moving through the legislative process, and instead they then, in contradiction to the specific statutory rules which say when they're supposed to send us recommendations, sent us a whole set of RIM recommendations instead of reinvest in Minnesota. Instead of rejecting these, saying that they had not met the statutory requirements to submit them to us, we looked at them. We talked to the people who understand RIM, and they said not only, and I believe that in Representative Erdahl's delete of, I think it was Erdahl, never remember, it was Erdahl or Torkelson, somebody's delete everything amendment, I think they had those RIM in it, even if they were submitted out of order. And we, in talking to people, put another chunk of RIM into the second year. So these are things, and nothing was put into the second year that was not, when you read through the whole reports of the legacy committee and the staff reports, was not, it was like, this is the year they were funding, this is year two of a four-year project. So we did two and three of that project. With the whole understanding, because I was on LCMR, which did things like this, and I've chaired it, in fact, for a couple of years, is that you do have the ability to rework these. You do have the ability to report back, to look at how they're going. We spent a lot of time looking at the legislative auditor's report, which said that we needed to have more oversight of these projects, and that's exactly what we're giving the commission, is we're giving them more oversight to do it. Another very important project in here, which I think was also in your delete everything amendment, this company called the Malkus Project. This is a forestry project in North Minnesota. This was a company that owns a whole bunch of forest land, and it's similar to what we did with the Blandon property several years ago. They said they're cutting off all access. This is incredibly important to people in the northern part of the state for hunting and fishing. And we've put, and I think you put it in yours too, in that second year, a down payment of $500 million to start discussing it. It's probably not enough, but we think it's enough to catch the company's attention. Again, I don't think that's willy-nilly, and particularly since you agreed with a whole bunch of these things, or Representative Erdahl did in his delete anything amendment. So, you know, I think I'm probably said enough.
I think you have. Representative McNamara, any further comments?
Tell McNamara not to use words like willy-nilly, and I won't get stirred up.
Do you want me to move to the...
You said there was stronger language in another committee, so we're so far we're okay. Representative McNamara, were you done?
If no one else is...
We have others, but...
Well, no, I was done with the Lessard-Sams. Maybe other ones could go on Lessard-Sams, and then I'll go into... I've got questions on the clean water and parks and trails, but if you want to do them in different
that
funds...
That sounds like a good way to do it. Representative Hausman?
Yes, Mr. Chair, mine is to the term willy-nilly. I thought it might be helpful to just make a historic reference for a definition of that term. And coincidentally, it comes from a very brief time. I was only on the old LCMR 2 years. And it coincided with Senator Lessard's service on that body as well. And of course, he's the namesake of the issue we're just talking about here. And at the time, there was a citizen process, and people sorted through projects, and all of that sorting and prioritizing and happened. And that group of projects came before us. And unfortunately, Senator Lessard's project didn't make it through that process. And so Senator Lessard made a motion that every legislator on the LCMR at the time could add one project of their own. And that motion passed. And so every legislator could add their project. I remember which one. Mine was the Gibbs Farm Museum. They still remember it to this day that I was able to deliver. That, Mr. Chair, I would suggest is a definition of willy-nilly.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We're going now to anybody else on this particular section. I want to move this along, Representative Cotton.
I know.
So. Representative McNamara, I guess we're ready for your next question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just in regards, and it'll only be a comment on the clean water one, because I do want to respect, I know that these areas interest me a lot more than a lot of the other folks, and so I understand that. In regards to clean water, Representative Kahn, I know it's Representative Wagenius carried that part of it. I really think it's unfortunate that so much money is going away from Bowser and the good work that they did and the recommendations of the Clean Water Council and the governor. I hope again, Representative Hausman did a lot better job of the words I talked about in describing them, so I'll try and not use those kind of words to let people go on that. But I hope that you will move the clean water money more to where it should be and less of the direction you're taking it now. Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, really might... I don't know if anybody wanted to comment or Representative Wagenius. It was her bill, so maybe I should let Mr. Chair in case... I don't want to just let my comments go unanswered if somebody wanted to say something.
You wanted Representative Kahn to respond?
No, they don't need to, but I don't like making comments about folks and not give them a chance to say something if they don't agree.
You know, I think we took the clean water section came exactly as it came from Representative Wagenius's committee, so I'd rather have her respond to it. And we've all agreed to be more careful about our language.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes, and I think one of the things that we will come to understand about the section you're talking about is, unfortunately, that Clean Water Council did not have or take an opportunity to deal with the groundwater issue that is facing us. They did not take the opportunity to see what was happening in the metropolitan area in our aquifers. They did not take the opportunity to look at what was happening in our northeast quadrant of the metropolitan area with not just White Bear Lake, but other areas. And so it became the legislature's responsibility to start to deal with those issues that are looming extremely large.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next, if I could just make some comments in regards to the Parks and Trails Council. Representative Kahn, I think you clearly in your bill, Minneapolis is the big winner in the bill. I mean, they're clearly the big winner in the entire bill. And unfortunately, in the Parks and Trails Council, it comes at the expense of our own state of Minnesota park system. Taking money from the parks, the state of Minnesota park system, you earmarked their money up to a huge extent. The trail earmarks in it, and the even to put trails that didn't make recommendation, didn't get, and to not let the folks that spend all the time in dealing with these issues and make recommendations on a priority list, you've created your own priority list. Representative Hausman and I both remember serving on, I only served one term on the LCMR before it had citizens, and I was a new legislator sitting in place of then Chair Representative Hausman and was dumbfounded at what I saw, and so it's certainly a much better process today there, and I think does really good work. But you're taking this Parks and Trails off on a new tangent that's really unfortunate. You take the budget reserves precariously low, way below what the auditor recommends, and you're doing it to the benefit of Minneapolis at the expense mostly of our state park system. You're way underfunding what the recommendation of the governor and the group that was put together. You've increased Minneapolis's funding at the expense, truthfully, of the bottom line. You're spending more money in this biennium than's even being brought in. You're taking the reserves that you started with and cutting them approximately in half from what they were to give Minneapolis more money out of this fund. And I think it's really unfortunate because a lot of people in this state voted for this fund to be spent in a way that they thought was wise, on the ground, and not to be earmarked like you are in this bill. This is really unfortunate, but I believe in the end the governor and the Senate and hopefully the Minnesota floor will be able to correct this and make it a good bill that you can take to conference and be proud of, because right now this bill, just the earmarks, Representative Kahn, I'm not going to use adjectives, but you've got stuff that wasn't even on the priority list. I have no idea where they've come from. We got away from that. We got away from earmarking and trading my trail for yours. I'll vote for it if you do this. And now we've gone right back to this. This is not why people voted for this amendment. They voted for the amendment for all the good things that we've done the last 4 years. This is a tragedy to see where this is going right now, and you're taking it, and you're going to argue, well, I gave more money to Dakota County. Yeah, you did. There's $200,000 more in here for Dakota County, but you robbed the bottom line of millions so that Minneapolis gets a bigger percentage of a bigger pot of money. If I'm not mistaken, Minneapolis and the agreed-upon percentages divided up in metro parks is supposed to get 19. Maybe it's 19.2. In your bill, it gets over 20%. Well, 20% of a bigger pie is better than 19% of a smaller pie. There was a lot of work bipartisanly to develop those percentages. And to throw them out the window and say now, and then not only did you rob from the state parks, you took all their money, or a lot of their money, then you earmarked the daylights out of what they've got to do with the money. Yeah, look at it, Representative Kahn. No, you can't shake your head no and say you don't have earmarks in there. Look at the bill the way it was presented to you, and look at it now with the earmarks you put in there. You left them just a sliver of the money uncommitted for different things. I don't know what, but you need to realize your colleagues, because you have a strong majority, represent the majority of state parks. I don't know what you've done to the state park and Representative Swawick's district down there, that little state park, I'm missing the name of it right down now, down there, they're not going to get as much money today. My state park in Afton's not going to get as much money today because of what you've done. I just hope you've been very good to work with. I know that's hard to believe for me to for people to say, well, how can you say that, Denny? You do listen. We don't necessarily agree, but you listen. My hope is as we go forward, you'll continue to listen and see the light, Representative Kahn. And sorry to go on so long, okay. Mr. Chair.
Let me
Representative Kahn, briefly.
Just very briefly. Minneapolis is not the big winner. Minneapolis, and there was one point in an original iteration where there was a big chunk of money from Minneapolis that was removed in the before the final bill came out. Minneapolis got treated like all nine other Metro Park agencies. The bill followed the priorities of the 10 Metro agencies and the list that DNR gave Gene's committee. We followed that list almost exactly. There was one point, and I don't know if he's here because I've had him come to committee after committee so I could have him explain it. There was one project I put in here which wasn't on anyone's priority list, and that was after discussions with Representative O'Driscoll for a very important project that we talked about, a regional parks project that defines what a Greater Minnesota Regional Park should be, that we put together with discussions with his county commissioners and with him. And we happened to just hit on this issue while we were both on the Your Legislators program. That was the program, you know, that was the only one that I felt somewhat guilty about hadn't gone through a process. But I had him here at almost any point, and I pointed it out at every iteration of the bill that we could discuss that one. And this was such a good example of a regional park in an area pretty far from my home district, I'll tell you, but it's an area of the state that's growing around St. Cloud. There was pending development. We need to acquire the land. There was a specific willing seller that was involved in doing it, and they were putting together a really good regional park proposal. And, you know, if we have to discuss that on the floor, I'd rather do it with Representative O'Driscoll at my side. But we, you know, remember, this passed. I didn't make this all up. This all passed as it is through, except for maybe the O'Driscoll. I don't remember if that was in. I think that was in, actually, through Representative Wagenius's committee. It's passed through that committee. We've had ample opportunity to discuss it. We'll have more opportunity to discuss it. And one of the other things, you know, with the huge fight about how we decided on Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and a bill that Representative Metzer brought into GovOps, which is now incorporated into this bill, you know, that was one where Mike Nelson sees Representative Metzer with the bill that's being ferociously attacked by Pepin and Kahn, and he decides it's a good idea to pull it back and have people work on it. And so we worked on something which the major people working on that say is great. So I'm proud of what we have in this bill. I think we can go forward in a better way in the future, and I'm looking forward to discussions with the Senate, with on the floor of the Senate, the governor.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McNamara, I cannot let the comments about Minneapolis go unanswered. In this bill, $147,000, $147 million is spent on outdoor heritage. What percentage of that is going into the metro? It is a small percentage. Let me look at the clean water. $191 million. I know that bill pretty well, and I'm sitting here trying to think, does Minneapolis get anything out of that? Maybe the study looking at viruses in drinking water, we will benefit from that. I don't know whether there are any viruses in our drinking water. That's it. The parks portion of this bill is the smallest portion of this bill. It's $84 million. So to say that Minneapolis is going whole hog in this bill is so out of line. I am just, we'll talk about it more on the floor, but do not try to make this a Minneapolis bill.
Mr. Chair, okay. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Representative Wagenius, and you are right. when you talk about the aggregate amount of money spent on the bill, and those of us that live in a city, many of us actually voted, whether you live in the city of Hastings or the city of Minneapolis, actually voted for this amendment with the idea that the money would be spent where it would help habitat, clean water, and parks and trails. Well, you know what? Unfortunately, the vast majority of habitat, water, and parks and trails aren't in our two cities. But we disproportionately have spent the money in the metro in regards to the acres and the resources. You and I know that. If you want to count it by population, you are correct. But actually, the people that live in Hastings and live in Minneapolis hunt, fish, and recreate outside of our city a lot, and they like the idea that the money be spent there, that some of that money be spent, because that's where we do those things. Now, Representative Wagenius, there was an agreement between all the Metro Parks folks in the percentages they would get. That agreement was Minneapolis would get 19.1. This bill changes it by over $1 million more and changes the percentage by more than a full percentage. Now, you can talk about the fact that you're not getting your fair share based on population. Yes, you are correct. But you're not getting the fair share that was agreed upon before. That your Minneapolis Park Board was part of the discussion. The ones with the most lobbyists around here were part of the discussion in what their percentage should be. And now you're getting more than what the agreed upon percentage. And the people that hunt, fish, and recreate from Minneapolis are probably very glad that some of the money is being spent where they do those things.
Well, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McNamara, do not speak for my constituents. I'm going to speak for my constituents. My constituents would very, very, very much like to have more habitat restored along the Mississippi Flyway. They really want that to happen. They understand, as Representative Kahn has mentioned, that if a duck has breakfast in Hastings, it's got to have lunch in Minneapolis before it goes on to Anoka County. That's the way nature works. So I think my constituents would like to have had some of the water money. But the way things work out this year, the big issue this year is groundwater drinking water, and my residents drink Mississippi River water and pay a lot to do that. That's not the issue this year. So I was willing to say, you know, I see what the issue is this year. It's in outstate Minnesota. It's in Marshall. It's in Worthington. It's in Fairmont. It's in Hibbings and Otter Tail County. It's in your county. So we're working for your county. So in the water fund, that money goes to your county because your county's in trouble. My city is not. And so I don't think we should get into this going after Minneapolis because it's the kind of cool thing to do. When I hear it, because I grew up in the South, I hear racism, and it really bugs me.
Okay. Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then, Representative Kahn renews her motion that House File 1183, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Thank you,
Representative Kahn. We now have the Representative Hansen's bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move
around for most of the morning. I assume he's somewhere close. You're going to what?
So we should have taken him first.
He was interested. He's Mr. Environment in many respects. Or a Mr. Environment.
That was a bad way to end.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. I mean, the percentages, your bill doesn't change the percentage that went to the school.
You get the bill before us while we're looking for the the author. I think Representative Atkins, would you be a good person to?
I would be happy to move that. House File 568 be recommended pass and be referred. Is it, Mr. Chairman, to the General Register, or was it
to the General Register? This
that's my motion. So,
okay, Representative Atkins moves that House File 568, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and sorry for the little delay.
I said you'd been around most of the morning, and
I thought it was going to keep going for a while, so I went to get a cup of coffee, and I should have known better.
Well, you're here now, and Representative Atkins took care of the procedural part of it on behalf of you and the bill. So, Representative Hanson.
Except for one thing, Mr. Chairman, and I think there is an author's amendment. Is that correct?
Yeah, that would be correct. Where we're going next. Do you want to move that?
I'd move the A4 amendment, Mr.
You
Chairman.
You want to take the author's amendment first, I assume. Okay, A4 amendment is moved by Representative Atkins and Representative Hanson. Did you want to explain the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the reason this bill and this amendment is here is you may have seen that this bill was on the calendar, and then we had some concerns raised about a fiscal cost. There were three fiscal notes prepared for this, and two in 2007. And one in 2008. Now, there currently is not a fiscal note for this at this time, but MMB raised some concerns because of the prior fiscal notes. So the amendment is designed to remove any potential cost to the state by having it go into effect after the next contract or when the next collective bargaining agreement or compensation plan is approved.
Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, I believe we've taken care of the fiscal cost. This bill, and there are advocates here, is amending state statute that I believe was first put in the late 80s, early 90s. Relating to leave benefits for businesses and agencies that currently have the traditional vacation leave and sick leave. This would allow those with sick leave to provide sick leave, accrued sick leave. It's not adding any additional benefit. It's providing those that have the sick leave benefit that they could take parents, grandparents, step-parent, sibling, spouse, minor or adult child to the doctors.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Representative Holder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's my understanding, at least in the private sector, there's just a move towards just having personal time and not defining whether it's sick leave or, you know, that people can spend their time off as they wish. Will this change any of those standards?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, my understanding is no. I mean, there's been a movement more towards flex leave where you could take either or has a number of names, but this is for when there's that traditional vacation and sick leave in the contracts or in the employer.
All right. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then Representative Atkins renews his motion whereby House File 568, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. We will begin, let's see, Monday.
Thank you.
10 a.m. on Monday, we'll be reconvening. So with that, everybody can have a good weekend, I hope. Meeting adjourned.